Chapter 35. The water fruit field stretched on forever, a perfect example of perspective, parallel rows of creamy white globes merging at some grey distance. Eleanor felt around underneath the next globe and cut the thick rope root with her knife. Inky sap puffed out, lost in the reservoir's slow current. She lifted the globe and steered it slowly into the neck of her net bag. There was another 20 water fruit inside, almost full. Turning back to the row, a dolphin snout pushed her hand. The knife missed the root. She looked at her hand, puzzled. Tried again. Two hard bumps on the back of her wrist, almost painful. Annoyance began to register in her sluggish thoughts. She held up her hand, palm outwards, pushing twice, back off. It was rusty. He didn't budge. Guarding the water fruit. Dark shapes slithered effortlessly through the water behind her, churning up a small cloud of silt. When she turned, she saw another pair of dolphins had got hold of the net bag, pulling it away. Angry now, her steady rhythm had been broken, hanging a meter off the reservoir bed, motionless, trying to outstare a dolphin. How odd. Now the monotony of harvesting was broken, she began to realize just how tired she was, muscles whispering their protest into her cortex. Arms, legs, shoulders, back, all laced with fatigue toxins. Exactly how long had she been doing this? The soft green light was fading fast overhead, lowering visibility to less than 50 meters. A cold flash of realization pinched her mind. She hadn't quite fallen into the trap of blue loss, but her soul had migrated, fleeing the memories of guilt and pain. Now they rushed back into her empty brain, unmitigated. Greg, calling, apologetic but firm, ruled by duty. Idiot, she'd answered, trying to disguise a jumble of secret worries and heart-wrenching concern with stiff resolution. He respected toughness. Both refusing to yield, he'd promised, she'd told him, promised solemnly. But he'd shaken his head, saying it wasn't like that. She'd cried herself to sleep, imagining terrible things happening on the Di Girolamo yacht. How silly it all seemed now. Words spoken, never meant. Eleanor gave Rusty a submissive thumbs up and headed for the surface, too weary to rush, a few wriggles with her flippers every couple of meters keeping her ascent steady. Rusty orbited her laggardly. The hire boats had all returned to the fishing lodge at Whitwell, away down the other prong of the reservoir. Even the windsurfers had packed up. The Berrybut Estates bonfire was sending flames shooting into the neutral sky, a spectre-light swarm of sparks lingering above the rectangular clearing in the still air. Rusty insinuated himself between her legs, and she hugged his dorsal fin gratefully. The ride back to the shore was nothing like the usual turbulent dash. A slow, smooth glide. Now why couldn't people be like dolphins? Sympathetic, gentle, perennially happy, magnificent creatures. The sun had fallen behind a pearl crescent horizon, piled high with lacy clouds, when Rusty let her off. She stroked his head and bent to kiss him. Rusty would understand. He chittered wildly and sank below the surface, suddenly leaping up again 5 meters away, twisting in midair and landing with an almighty splash. She laughed. First time all day. The pebbles on the drying mud cut into her feet as she walked out of the water, her skin like soft, crinkled putty after such a long immersion. It had been midday when she'd begun harvesting. Greg had sworn he'd be back by early morning. Eleanor had waited until lunchtime for him to return. Then her tolerance had snapped, and she dived into the water, sulky and furious. Duncan was fire warden this evening. He lived 2 chalets down from number 6. Eleanor stopped to say hello, letting the bonfire's ruddy furnace heat dry her puckered skin, welcoming the warmth permeating through her limbs. Duncan gave her a couple of baked potatoes out of the raw clay oven tunnel, which ran through the heart of the bonfire, eyeing her chest as the flames threw liquid orange ripples across the dull sparkle nylon of her one-piece costume. She thanked him, straight-faced, and juggled the hot potatoes back to the chalet. Duncan was sweet. And his covert schoolboy glances started her thinking about how she and Greg could spend the evening making up. The duo hadn't returned. Eleanor almost dropped the potatoes. Greg had been gone for 30 hours now. No matter how big their row, he wouldn't have done that without telling her. She dumped the mirror lung and the potatoes on the porch, blipping the lock. Inside, and the snug familiarity of the little lounge, offered no comfort at all. She activated the Event Horizon terminal, loading Greg's cyberfax number. The delay warned her. Connections never took more than a second. After 15 seconds, the flat screen printed, "The unit you have called is currently outside Eurocom's interface zone." Now the dark worry she'd held back really began to mount. She didn't even hesitate before loading Gabriel's number. "The unit you have called is currently outside Eurocom's interface zone." The heart flutter of panic didn't come from fear. It was not knowing what to do next. Instinct cried out to call the police. But snatching that Katerina girl was incredibly illegal. Eleanor wondered if they'd got caught, flung into prison. She could hardly ask. Then she remembered Gabriel had been with him all the time. Nothing could go wrong with Gabriel there to provide advance warning. A doddle, he'd said. A late, lame attempt to reassure her. Then why wasn't he back here? Her cold mind screamed silently. The ludicrous notion of him running off with Gabriel intruded. Dismissed instantly. She thought for a second, then raced for the bedroom and her cupboard. The Trinities would know. Maybe where he was, certainly what to do next. The card Royan had given her was still in her bag. She showed it to the terminal, praying. The flat screen remained blank, but she heard scuffling sounds from the speaker. "Yeah?" The voice was male, flat and uninterested.
"I want to speak to Teddy. Father."
"No shit."
"No."
Eleanor thought she'd blown it. There was only aching silence, cursing her brittle nerves. The screen cleared to show Teddy's face.
"Eleanor, right? What's up, girl?"
She let out a sob of relief. Teddy's frown grew as she explained. She wondered if she was coming over like a hysterical, jilted girl. He had to realize how important this was.
"Greg didn't leave any message for you at all?"
Teddy asked when she finished. And he was taking it seriously. Her confidence rose a fraction. She wasn't alone any more.
"None."
"That ain't right," Teddy said. "Greg would always cover himself. Standard procedure. And Gabriel Cyberfax is dead too."
"Yes, at least English Telecom says both of them are outside the satellite footprint."
Teddy paused for a moment.
"Okay. My people left him going into the Event Horizon Finance Division office. I can't believe the company would waste him. They knew they could trust Greg. And it ain't that sort of deal, anyway. Besides, they let my people get clear. Thing that bothers me is Gabriel. She's, like, invincible, you know?"
He started typing on his terminal keyboard, looking at something off-camera. Unintelligible voices stuttered in the background.
"Okay, I want you to call that Morgan Walshaw guy for me. You get shoved around by secretaries and the like. Don't take no shit. Insist on speaking to him. Him only. Ask him if he knows where Greg is. Then call me right back. You'll get straight through this time. I'm going to see what I can find out about Gabriel, if she ever got back."
"How?"
Teddy's face melted into a fast, keen grin.
"I got friends everywhere."
"Oh."
She felt foolish asking.
"Eleanor, you did good calling me, girl. We'll get him back for you."
And he was gone before she could thank him. Eleanor tugged on a silk blouse before she called Event Horizon, respectable from the waist up, twisting damp hair into a ponytail. Morgan Walshaw's number was in the terminal's memory core. The screen lit with a polite-looking young man in a neat powder-blue business suit. Eleanor swallowed.
"This is Mandel Investigative Services," she said. "I'm returning Mr. Walshaw's call on a case we're covering for him."
He shrugged, friendly, she thought.
"I'm sorry," he said. "We can't reach Mr. Walshaw at the moment." "If you check, you'll see our company is cleared for direct access."
"Hey, I'm not giving you the runaround, not someone as pretty as you. Mr. Walshaw really is out of touch."
"Isn't that unusual?"
"Very. There's some big glitch in our communications net right now. Really shot it up. It's headless chicken chaos around here at the moment."
"I see."
But she wasn't sure she believed.
"Listen, if it's really urgent, why don't I call you back as soon as the glitch has been debugged? We've got Mandel Investigative Services number on file. Who shall I ask for?" Eleanor. Eleanor Brody.
Pleased to meet you, Eleanor. I'm Bernard Merton.
That's very kind of you to offer, Bernard. Have you any idea how long it'll take to debug this glitch?
Nope, sorry.
He smiled ingratiatingly. She wondered if he'd have enough courage to ask her out for a drink. Struck by how bizarre this all was, being chatted up by a randy assistant while God knows what was happening to Greg, sliding her mind back onto the problem.
"This data package I've got for Warshaw is very important," she said. "I don't suppose you could tell me where he is. I could hand-deliver it."
Sure, no ultra-hush about that. He's with Miss Evans at her home. But you won't be able to get in. It's sealed up tight. Something to do with the communications glitch. They don't tell me anything."
Thanks, Bernard.
She broke the connection before he could say anything else. There was a number for Willem in the terminal memory, listed as private. Should have done this to start with, Eleanor thought as the connection was placed. Greg always said go straight to the top for real results. The terminal's flat screen dissolved into a trickle of snowstorm, red, green and yellow specks skipping about. The speaker hissed with static. Eleanor stared at it uncomprehendingly, then cleared the order, ready to try again.
Error, flashed the flat screen as she punched up the menu.
An icy dread settled on her skin, like a fast autumn morning frost, piercing clean into her heart. This was something to do with Greg. She knew it was. Greg, Event Horizon, Julia, Gabriel, Walshaw, Katrina, all bound together in some devil's tangle. Thoroughly spooked, she punched up the menu again. Error. 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 The flat screen went dead. Not even that absurd Will-o'-the-Wisp nebula. Eleanor snatched up the Trinity's card and ran out into the twilight.
Duncan!
People turned to look at her, pale ovals of surprise and concern.
Duncan!
He was abruptly standing in front of her, face wrapped with a mixture of eagerness and trepidation.
Your terminal! I have to use your terminal! She cried.
Duncan seemed startled, her frantic urgency taking a moment to sink in.
Ryan, sure.
Eleanor wanted to grab him and shake him as he fidgeted through his cards, eventually finding the right one for his door with a shy, apologetic grimace.
Is it Greg? Is he all right?
Yes, no, I'm not sure. That's why I need the terminal.
The door swung open.
Here we go.
Duncan had an old Emerson terminal, the keyboard worn, some of the touch tabs completely blank. He tapped the power stud. Eleanor punched out the phone function with a pulse of anarchic energy, then showed her Trinity's card to the key. Duncan's face went white when he saw the bold fist and thorn cross emblem. Eyes widening.
I'll be outside.
Teddy's face appeared, leaning forwards, squinting.
Hell, what's happened with you, girl?
She told him, barely coherent, words falling over each other in her rush to expel them. Made an effort to calm down.
Not good, he scowled. Gabriel never made it home either. We want to find out where they was headed. We gotta talk to Walshaw or that Julia Evans gal.
Can't. The security man said Willem was sealed up, that I wouldn't be able to get in.
And they ain't taking no calls neither, Teddy said. Hostile to him even. Strange. Something in there they don't want no one to see. Ask me. And it's something plugged into whatever the Christ is going down. Gotta be. Lay you down good money on that, gal. You know what?
What?
Reckon we ought to take a look-see.
There was a dense gleam of excitement in his eyes, some of his tension draining away.
Yes, but how?
In nowhere God can't reach. Not if he really wants to. Can you get to Willem tonight?
Yes.
Okay. I'll round me up a few troops, meet you outside the main entrance in an hour. How's that grab you?
Great.
And she was lumbered with the problem of transport.
Everything all right?
Duncan called as she ran down the slope to the water.
Fine.
Lying. Curious eyes tracking her flight. There were three rowing boats tied up at the Berrybutt Estate's little wharf. One of them was Greg's. She unwound the painter from its hoop and hopped in. The floating village was 3 kilometers away, an impossible distance. Why, oh why, didn't the marina depths even have a cyberfax between them? Isolation was fine, but not to that extreme. Eleanor began to row, lifting one of the oars out every 10 or so strokes to slap the water 3 times. The marina depths had a van, an old Bedford pickup they used to take the water fruit down to Oakham Station. They'd help, and keep silent. She hadn't gone 100 meters when the dolphins surfaced around the boat, 3 of them, agitated, tuning in on her distress, just in time. The surge of adrenaline that had got her this far was fading rapidly, arms already leaden. Eleanor chucked the blouse and dived right into the chilly black water, shockingly aware she'd never been swimming at night before. The dolphins clustered round, snouts butting her gently. She brought her hands together, making a triangle, then pressing her palms together. Home, fast. Again. Loud chittering, then one of the sleek grey bodies rose under her. She hung on grimly, and they began to slice through the water, curving round Hambleton Peninsula towards the floating village.